Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app.
Okay, let's just dive right in. When we think about DNA damage, I think most of us picture these huge, you know, catastrophic events.
Right, like a blast of UV radiation or a major chemical toxin.
Exactly. We frame it as this exception, this thing that goes wrong. But the reality is, well, it's that the cellular environment is actually pretty hostile.
It is. DNA damage is a constant fact of life. Your cells, my cells, they're all repairing themselves 24/7. It's not the exception, it's the rule.
And that's really the starting point for this deep dive.
It is. You have these amazing repair systems, things like base or nucleotide excision repair, and their whole job is to constantly patrol the genome and fix these little lesions.
They're incredibly efficient, but there's a catch, isn't there?
Yes.
Their method creates this temporary weak point. It does. To fix the problem, they have to cut out the bad base or bad segment. And that leaves behind a little single-strand break, what scientists call a nick, or maybe a short gap.
Now, for us, for eukaryotes, that's not a deal breaker. We have these long, linear chromosomes, multiple backup origins of replication.
So if one replication fork stalls, there are other options. It's not great, but it's manageable.
But for bacteria, this little repair intermediate, this temporary nick, it's a completely different story.
It's an immediate existential threat. Most bacteria, and that includes the one we're focusing on today, Bacillus subtilis, they have a single circular chromosome.
And just one origin of replication.
Just one, so the stakes are incredibly high.
Which brings us to the central question. What happens if that massive, fast-moving replication machine, the replisome, is just barreling down the DNA and runs headlong into one of those nicks before it's been sealed?
The result is, well, catastrophic. The sheer force of the replisome converts that small, manageable nick into a massive, irreversible problem.
A single-end double-strand break, and CDSB.
Exactly. It effectively shears the chromosome right there at the replication fork, and everything grinds to a halt.
So a tiny, completely necessary step in routine maintenance accidentally triggers this huge, self-inflicted genetic wound.
And in a bacterium, that's usually game over.
So our deep dive today is all about the incredible step-by-step rescue mission that a bacterial cell has to launch to save its own genome from this collapse.
And before we get into the nitty-gritty of that rescue, we really have to celebrate the work that allowed us to see it so clearly.
Of course.
Today we are celebrating the work of Charles Winterhalter, Catherine J. Stratton, Stepan Fennec, and Heath Murray.
They're a team from the Center for Bacterial Cell Biology at Newcastle University, and they have just dramatically pushed our understanding of these repair mechanisms forward.
They did it with their article, "Rescuing the Bacterial Replisome at a Nick Requires Recombinational Repair and Helicase Reloading," which was published in Nature Communications back in November of 2025.
So as you said, the work focuses on Bacillus subtilis, which is a great model organism. And the problem is this collision between routine DNA repair, which makes a nick, and the replisome, which is just trying to do its job.
Exactly. And when that collision happens, the whole machine collapses. Now, historically, we've understood that survival from this requires a kind of two-part operation.
Okay, what are the two parts?
First, the cell has to stitch that broken chromosome back together using homologous recombination. It basically uses the intact sister chromosome as a perfect template.
Right, it uses the good copy to patch up the broken one.
Precisely. And second, once the DNA itself is fixed, that entire replisome, that whole engine, has to be completely reassembled and restarted.
And that involves reloading the key component, the helicase.
Yes, using a system called the priade-dependent pathway. The real goal of this paper was to move past those generalizations and define the essential, the non-redundant molecular players in both of those phases.
Which brings us to the methodology, because this was such a clever piece of genetic engineering. I mean, studying natural DNA damage is, it's like trying to predict a car crash. It's totally random.
It's stochastic, yeah. You never know where or when it's going to happen. So they solved that problem. They designed a controlled crash. They used CRISPR technology. But instead of the normal Cas9 that cuts both DNA strands, they used a variant, a Cas9 nickase, specifically the Cas9 D10A variant.
Which only cuts one strand.
Only one. So it's like a genetic scalpel that creates the exact single-strand nick they needed to study.
And by using guide RNAs, they could tell it exactly where to cut.
Yes. On command, at a specific spot on the B subtilis chromosome, it's a brilliant way to mimic that natural repair intermediate so you can study the consequences over and over again.
Okay, so they can trigger the catastrophe, but then how do they you know, watch the cleanup? How do they track what happens next?
They used a really robust three-pronged approach. First, to prove replication actually failed, they used marker frequency analysis, or MFA.
That's with whole genome sequencing, right?
It is. The logic is simple. If replication gets past the nick, the DNA coverage stays high downstream. If it stops, the coverage just drops off a cliff. So that drop is the signature of failure.
So that tells them the engine has definitely stopped.
Then, to prove that little nick became a big double-strand break, they tracked a protein called ReA.
Ah, the master recombinant.
It is one and only. When ReA finds broken DNA, it assembles into these big fluorescent bundles that you can actually see under a microscope. So seeing those bundles meant, yes, we've created massive damage that needs recombination.
And the third technique was to figure out who shows up to the crash site and when.
Right, the choreography. For that, they used CKP to BCR. It's a way of asking which key proteins are physically present right at the scene of the crime at that nick site.
So they could map where the helicase was, where restart proteins like Prea were, all relative to the break.
It gives you this incredible level of molecular detail.
But there was a problem at first, wasn't there? The nicking system was actually, it was too good at its job.
That was a huge experimental hurdle. The funk version was so strong, so persistent, that it just kept nicking the DNA faster than the cell could ever hope to repair it.
So it was preventing the very recovery process they wanted to study.
Completely. So they had to get clever. They engineered a weaker system in Cas9 SRA by adding a tag that told the cell to degrade the protein.
So it became a transient nick, not a permanent one.
Exactly. And that finally let them see the whole survival pathway play out. From the break, all the way to a successful restart.
That level of fine-tuning is just incredible. Okay, so let's get into the results. First off, they found that a nick on either strand, leading or lagging, it stopped replication dead in its tracks.
Yes, that was universal. Severe growth inhibition, replication arrest downstream. The replicase just fails.
But, and this is the part I found so surprising, the fate of the core engine, the DNase helicase, was totally different depending on which strand had the nick.
It's genuinely counterintuitive, isn't it?
Yeah,
same
yeah.
machine, same type of damage. You'd expect the same result.
Right, so what happens?
Well, if the lagging strand template gets nicked, the helicase basically just runs off the DNA. It completely disengages from its track.
It's like the engine just flies off the ramp.
That's a perfect analogy. But if the leading strand template is nicked, something else happens. The helicase doesn't run off. It actually keeps moving downstream of the nick.
But it's not working, right?
No. The data suggests it enters this inactive state.
Yeah.
It's still encircling the DNA, but it's just kind of sliding along the double-stranded DNA without actually unwinding anything.
So in one case, it's gone, and in the other, it's stalled, but still hanging around downstream like an inactive passenger.
Exactly. And in both cases, the damage was severe. They saw those RegaNA bundles in almost 60% of the leading strand nick cells. And nearly half of the lagging strand cells. It was definitely a double strand break.
And the rescue crew, the restart proteins like Pre-A, where did they show up?
Critically, they were heavily enriched upstream of the nick site. That's the smoking gun that tells you the original replicase was completely inactivated and a whole new machine had to be built from scratch.
And that restart was totally dependent on Pre-A.
Unequivocally, when they hampered Pre-A's function, the cells just couldn't restart synthesis. So this isn't just one way to restart replication. For this type of damage, it is the essential pathway.
So to map out that entire essential pathway, they did a genetic screen. They basically asked, okay, which genes that are normally non-essential suddenly become critical for survival when we turn on our nicking system?
And they found 8. 2 were for the initial DNA end processing, that's ADA and ADB, and the other 6 were all core parts of recombinational repair.
The REC-F4 system, RESE, RESG?
All of them. And RESC. It was definitive proof that homologous recombination is the only way the cell can survive this.
This leads us to what I think is one of the most elegant findings in the whole paper, about the function of ADAB.
Oh, absolutely.
We know ADAB is a complex. It has helicase activity to unwind DNA and nuclease activity to cut it. The question is, which one is needed here?
Then the classic model would say you need the nuclease to, you know, chew back the DNA and clean up the break.
But that's not what they found.
Not at all. It was this beautiful surprise. Their viability assays showed that if you use a version of ADO that's helicase defective, the cells die. Replication stays blocked.
And the nuclease defective version?
The cells grew perfectly fine. The ability to cut the DNA was completely dispensable. But the ability to unwind it was absolutely necessary and, it turns out, sufficient for that first step of repair.
So it's not about chewing back the broken end. It's about using the helicase function to quickly unzip the DNA right at the break.
Yes. You're not destroying it, you're preparing it. It's this localized unwinding that exposes the single-stranded DNA needed for the very next step in the relay.
Which is where SSB, the single-strand binding protein, comes in.
Exactly. That newly exposed ssDNA is immediately coded and protected by SSB.
Okay, so this brings us to the molecular handoff. SSB is great at protecting that single-stranded DNA, but you have to get it off so that Rike can get on and do its job.
And that's where this little floppy bit of the SSB protein, its C-terminal tail, or SSB-CTT, becomes the star of the show.
It's a protein interaction hub.
A critical one. The study confirmed that without that tail, the cells could not survive the nicking. It is absolutely essential.
And its specific job here.
Its job is to physically grab and recruit another protein called RECO, which is part of the REC-A4 system.
So RECO shows up.
RECO shows up, and the REC-A4 system then works to basically pry SSB off the DNA, clearing the runway for REC-A to land and initiate the whole recombination process.
So it's this incredibly specific single-track pathway. AdAbby helicase makes the ssDNA, the SSB tail acts as the dock. RECO is the first one to dock, which lets REC-A4 kick off SSB, which lets REC-A get on.
It's a beautiful, intricate, but non-redundant relay race.
Now, there were a couple of other required proteins that had these nuanced roles, like RECA.
Right, RECA was fascinating. It was recruited just upstream of the nick,
yeah.
And it seems to act after REC-A has done its initial strand exchange.
So what's its job?
RIG is a translocase. It's a molecular motor that can remodel complex DNA structures. So the thinking is, it comes in to remodel that messy branched structure, like a holiday junction or the collapsed fork itself, and basically prepares a clean landing pad for the final act.
Which is pre-A reloading the helicase.
Exactly. It's the final architectural tweak before the restart.
And the last one, RE-AU, also had a bit of a twist. Deleting it was bad for viability, but the raw replication data showed restart was actually fine without it.
And that really highlights how careful you have to be interpreting data. They looked closer, and the problem wasn't replication restart. The RE-AU mutant cells had massive problems with chromosome segregation.
So they couldn't separate their chromosomes properly before dividing.
Right. They were dying because they couldn't complete cell division. Not because they failed to fix the initial fork collapse. The repair worked, but a later step failed. That's a critical distinction when you're defining a pathway.
So putting all of these molecular pieces together, AdAbby, SSB, RECO, Pre-A, what is the big picture here? What does this incredibly precise, non-redundant pathway mean for us?
It means we've found an Achilles heel for bacteria. By defining this obligate, single-track pathway that they absolutely require to survive this common type of damage, the researchers have pinpointed a major survival bottleneck.
And the clinical side of that is immediately obvious. Many of our antimicrobial drugs work by damaging DNA.
Precisely. Think about antibiotics that generate oxidative stress. If you can damage the DNA with one drug and then use another drug to block this one specific rescue pathway.
And that initial damage, which might have been survivable, suddenly becomes lethal.
Instantly lethal. It's a strategy that could dramatically boost the power of our existing drugs. It's a potential new way to combat antibiotic resistance.
That is just a phenomenal piece of work, moving from a fuzzy idea of repair to this specific step-by-step molecular blueprint for survival.
It's a critical definition. The collapse of a bacterial replicase at a nick triggers this obligate single-track rescue mission.
And the key steps are AdAbby's helicase function exposing the DNA, the SSBC terminal tail acting as the essential hub to recruit RECO, which lets RECO load, and then Pre-A coming in to finish the job by reloading the helicase.
A textbook definition of survival under fire.
Which really leaves us with a final provocative thought for all of you listening. Given the high specificity and the non-redundancy of this bacterial repair pathway and its potential to work in synergy with existing drugs, how quickly can we exploit these essential molecular steps to design brand new antibacterial therapies that can finally defeat resistance? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base. Ooh, oh, 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 oh.
strain will lift.